at top of the hour. So stay tuned to KBOO Portland, getting out to you in Cascadia via 90.7 and other frequencies, getting out to you on the World Wide Web, KBOO.fm, out to all the ships at sea.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for listening to your community radio, KBOO Portland. Air Cascadia is up next with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Your host, Chris Andre, coming right up.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Calling Home the Dead on Thursday, October 19th at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Calling Home the Dead is a fundraiser for VOZ and KBOO Community Radio that includes music, dancing, a procession of cachinas y cachinas, and delicious Dia de los Muertos pastries and horchata. The film Calling Home the Dead will also be screened, showing the Dia de los Muertos traditions of the towns that surround Lake Pátzcuaro in Mexico. Again, that's Calling Home the Dead on Thursday, October 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
In Cascadia. Today is Thursday, October 12th, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your resistance radio, your whistleblower radio, and of course your fake news radio, because after all, where are you actually going to get closer to truth on the ground than to your fake radio services? Our up to bat right now would be NBC News, which Trump thought that he could just axe by his imperial mandate. And so I suppose that his handlers are right now surrounding him and protecting him from himself, and essentially protecting us from his magnificent self. Also, that said, fake news, yeah, don't you love it? Today's guest, we have Matthew Ho. I cannot possibly, unless you've been following this, unless you're one of the very few, the handful of people in the U.S. that is concerned about Afghanistan, whether from a geopolitical point of view, the fact that a culture, in fact, Afghanistan is not a culture, it's many cultures. There are many different, there are nomadic tribes, or there were nomadic tribes, each one with its own signature, for example, designs of carpets, its own particular types of banking systems, for that matter, many of which consist of the jewelry which women wear. Their routes are different, their animals are different. They gather at Nowruz or Zoroastrian New Year in up in Mazar Sharif, where there are Gushkazi games, camel fights, and potentates arriving by helicopter. God knows, you have to love a potentate in a helicopter. But nonetheless, Matthew Ho, in 2009, resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the escalation of the war there by the Obama administration. He has previously been in Iraq with the State Department team and with the Marines. He is now a senior fellow with the Center for International policy. Hold that thought for just a moment, because we've got a little bit of weather to talk about. First, today we're going to see a few showers this morning, highs around 54, for tonight lows around 46, and Friday brings more showers and a bit warmer, highs around 58 to for tomorrow night, lows around 44, and rolling on into the weekend, partly sunny on Saturday with a high around 59, Saturday night low temperatures again, same pattern brings us all the way around full circle to Monday morning. And that said, we also have just a couple of other things. Our House representatives are moving to restrict the president's ability to protect billions of acres of federal land. They don't mean this president either. They mean Obama. Federal land considered historic, geographically significant, or culturally important. And might as well kiss that off. The Oregon Department of Justice has agreed to pay $205,000 to settle that federal lingering federal lawsuit, let us say. Arias Johnson Jr. brought the lawsuit after learning that he had put under digital surveillance by his own colleague. An investigator said that Johnson was ordered in September end of 2015 to test new software to search for potential anti-government threats, and found out he was one of them. He'd been assigned to investigate himself, all because of what? All because he happened to have looked at hashtag Black Lives Matter. Yes, indeed. It's so over the top racist that it's unspeakable. I mean, it's laughable this should be happening. And $205,000 is nothing. That doesn't pay for generations and generations of this treatment and worse. This is kind of a digital strange fruit, eh? That said, yesterday, grandmother was in court because protesting in the name of future generations. And joining us right now, we have Matthew Ho on the line. Thank you so much for being with us today, Matthew.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on.
So you've done a number of very, I think, brave, courageous acts, and specifically with regard to Afghanistan, which I visited, and when I was there, which was a long, long time ago. Afghanistan is not so much a country as a rest stop with various tribal people passing through, nomadic people passing through. There are villages. There had been a tradition of a bit of internecine warfare for a while, but because that threat had natural limitations, and they couldn't engage in ground-to-air missile strikes on passing planes and so forth. But that said, I want to ask you about Afghanistan right now and the U.S. involvement. So it's not enough now for the U.S. to supply massive amounts of arms and ammunition. Now they're supplying it to everybody, all comers, as long as they keep this going. Right. They have a market for weapons.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I mean, just to get back to the history of Afghanistan, it's important to remember that for over 40 years, between 1930s and the 1970s, when Afghanistan was united under King Zahir Shah, there was no warfare. That Afghanistan had an incredible four decades of peace. You had fighting between various maybe villages or tribes, as you said, but for decades Afghanistan was at peace. And it's only in the 1970s. When the outside powers, the United States and the Soviet Union, start to really get involved in Afghanistan, start to really be involved in these machinations of trying to one-up each other in making sure Afghanistan was the right color of the map for them, right? For the Soviets, it had to be red. For the Americans, it had to be blue. You know, and if you look at, you know, the Americans, particularly what Zbigniew Brzezinski carried out throughout lots of parts of the world, but especially in Afghanistan, you can trace the suffering of the Afghan people these last four decades of political chaos and war directly to the involvement of these superpowers. And that has continued for decades. Even in the 90s, when people claim that the United States left Afghanistan, that's not simply true. That's not true at all. We funded the various Mujahideen warlords for several years after the Soviets departed, and that allowed the deaths of tens and tens of thousands when these warlords were shelling and rocketing Kabul in the early 90s. So it's important to trace this history to where we are now, and just like you said, Chris, where the idea that America is the arms manufacturer, America is the arms depot for all these wars is completely true. And our allies are right behind us. If you look at who sells the most weapons in the world, you know, it's the United States. Within 2015, the United States had 53% of the global arms share in terms of weapons sold. Right behind us at number two, though, were the British. You know, and the French are in the top 10. The Israelis are in the top 10. You know, I mean, the Italians are. So this is something that all these wars, all this suffering, all this violence would not be possible without the weapons coming from the rich countries into the poor countries that allows these conflicts to not just continue, but as we see, say, in Syria or in Yemen and in Afghanistan, the conflicts to escalate and get larger and larger and more deadly every year.
It seems that it's about just one big trade show for these types of weapons, where they go to show off what they got and sell it to the highest bidder. And as you speak of the human suffering is immaterial. This is what was used to be known as the Great Game, I believe. Russia and the British and the French were in there, and no one has ever conquered Afghanistan. The British tried twice and failed twice. And having been there and seen the country, I do believe that Afghanistan will fight to the last man standing. For that matter, the last child standing. Everybody else, though, will scatter to the four winds, and it won't be, I don't believe, a refugee. I don't think Afghanis think in terms of refugees. They think of in terms of moving on. What about ISIS, and how did America come to sell weapons to some of these other groups, Taliban and so forth?
Yeah, I agree with you. They will, particularly the Pashtun people who make up the bulk of the insurgency in Afghanistan. Their reasons behind their fighting, and as you said, fighting to the last, really last man, woman, and child, are no different than the reasons that the Vietnamese fought.
Yes.
No different than the way the Native Americans fought. Look, we bombed Vietnam more than we bombed Europe in World War II. We killed 4 million Vietnamese. We poisoned another 1.5 million or so with Agent Orange, and children are still, and they would not give up. And the Native Americans, we had to commit genocide against them, you know, and to get their lands. They would not give up. And this is the same type of people who are occupied, will not submit. You can try and subjugate them, but you're going to have to murder every last one of them until it's over. And what that does, though, is that opens, as in all violence, right? Just even think of it in terms of interpersonal violence. If you punch somebody or you get into a fight, how that spirals out of control, how that brings in other actors, how that brings in consequences you never could have predicted. Just on a personal or individual level, if you think about in your own life, how violence affects you. But on this stage, on this platform, it's much greater, of course. And this type of violence, these types of wars, allow for organizations like the Islamic State, like Al-Qaeda, these other, you know, to come into play, to gather supporters, to utilize events to their own advantage, or to co-opt legitimate grievance movements in order for their own extremist ideas. But with the Islamic State, I mean, this is a whole, the Islamic State is the grandchild of, you know, the American invasion of Iraq in 2003, the American invasion and occupation. Of course, Al-Qaeda in Iraq was the child of that, and that is what spawned the Islamic State as we now know it. But more pernicious, more nefarious, and more revolting in all this, Chris, is the fact that in the years of the Syrian Civil War, particularly the early years of the Syrian Civil War, the United States knowingly and willingly backed the Islamic State, as well as Al-Qaeda in Syria, you know, the Nusra Front, in order to try and achieve its aims of overthrowing the Syrian government of Bashar Assad. And this is well documented. We see this in either documents that were released from the Defense Intelligence Agency or in WikiLeaks of the files that came out of Hillary Clinton. Also, too, many journalists have reported on this.
On that, Matthew, hang on a second, Doug. We are out of time. Do you want to just sum it up, just wrap it up for listeners? One of my goals here is to, people need to take an interest in this. People need to keep an eye out. People find out more about Afghanistan, its history, and in an effort to understand what's going on now. What would you like people to think about?
I think they need to look at history as a continuum, right? And I want people to think about this. When Donald Trump the other day, last week, was joking, twice he joked about starting a new war, about killing millions of people, and the military men and women who were around him, all those generals and